Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio today is our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Got a nice rainy day here in Georgia. I hope everyone is staying out of the storms where you're listening in from. A lot of storms hitting the country, but got a great program today, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
We got three guests, so we got a jam-packed program today. Our first guest will be from Vivera.
Vivera,
one of the leading workplace wellness providers out of Dallas, Texas. We'll follow with Alkalade, one of the leaders in really providing on-demand healthcare concierge. And then our third guest is with GIF, one of the leaders in really providing an enterprise health benefit platform that helps employers really manage all the various vendors and really look at digging down deep and at cost savings. So jam-packed program today, and we're excited to have these guests spend the time with us today. We're hard at work on Expo, aren't we, Jonathan, getting our big May event to come together. The early bird rate right now, the end of the month for people that want to attend. Any updates on the program, Jonathan?
Yeah, quite a few. As you mentioned, we're less than 2 months out now from our flagship conference, so the program is nearing completion. We have a lot of great vendors that are already signed up to be there. Some interesting additions to the program this week. In particular, one that caught my eye was the one that Jonathan So at the Detroit Regional Chamber is doing. And Jonathan spoke with us at Forum West last year, and he had some really unique, maybe provocative ideas about health benefits and healthcare and how we can improve the system. So for this year's event, Jonathan will actually be hosting his own employer case study workshop. He's going to be talking about, some of the unique things employers in the Detroit area are doing, in particular focusing on what he calls the criticality of engaging millennials. And he's going to actually have Jeff Wilson, who's the SVP of Total Global Rewards at Western Union, join him on there.
Pretty major employer.
Yeah, it is. And, in his topic description, he notes that in four renewal cycles, millennials will represent 50% of the average employer's workforce. So engaging with millennials and communicating, maybe they're hearing about, a lot of these employee benefits and healthcare issues for the first time in the midst of all of this change in the market. We're seeing, shift to high deductible health plans, telehealth, et cetera, in the context of, the healthcare system that we've seen in the past couple of decades. But, communicating these new solutions will definitely be a struggle possibly for some employers.
And that fits in well with our general session that we're focused on millennials too, or we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Jody Brainer,
yep,
of course, will be leading that session. And right now I think we're still finalizing that one, how millennials are changing healthcare benefits. That'll be on Wednesday, May 25th. And again, Jody Brainer, she's with Willis Towers Watson. Very prominent, well-known consultants in the Atlanta market in particular.
Very forward-thinking, producer and consultant.
Absolutely. Yeah. And right now we have two fantastic panelists. Again, we haven't finalized this one, but, right now, who better than Dr. Eric Bricker at Compass? He's their chief medical officer. And then, of course, Vinay Gidwani at Maxwell.
Yeah.
And Vinay is the chief product officer there. And, if you've been to our past events, he's no stranger. He was at the Dallas event speaking on, the total consumer experience, and he really has some interesting ideas about where this market's going.
Yeah, he does. And they looked at it first from the consumer point of view, I think, very interesting, you know, look, when Maxwell first rolled out. Then we cannot not talk about our opening keynote general session, where we've got Atlanta wellness professionals led by Elizabeth Dixon from Chick-fil-A, you know, really leading companies talking to our national audience about what greater area Atlanta employers are doing around wellness and moving mm-hmm. towards total well-being, you know, addressing total well-being
right.
of their own employee populations. Just really quality companies there.
Mm-hmm.
And the unique thing for any potential attendee listening is that you'll have an opportunity to go into a follow-up workshop for a very intimate Q&A following, you know, there'll
That's
be
right.
a Q&A with the keynote, but then you'll be able to go into a more intimate workshop environment and, you know, continuing those questions for, you know,
mm-hmm.
up.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
right. That's
up to
kind
an
of,
hour.
You know, we've done this before and we'll be doing it again with John Hickman's
right.
Compliance session. And, you know, that's another, that's kind of a staple of our conference programs. We get such good feedback on that one. And so, you know, John Hickman of Alston and Byrd, top legal minds, of course, he usually does his kind of Q&A follow-up. That's kind of a more free structured discussion. It's just pretty much bring your questions and let's talk. So this year we're going to do that, you know, a similar format with the opening keynote address. So again, Elizabeth Dixon with Chick-fil-A, Sarah King with Director of Wellness at Harvard Clinic, Jamie Benton at Rollins, Lauren Corzan at the CDC, they will all be available, and other members with Atlanta Wellness Professionals, they will be available for a one-hour Q&A after the opening general session. And then, of course, you know, we have to mention our closing employer panel as well.
Yep.
You know, we have probably more employers on this program than I think that we've ever had since I've been working on the conference programs. And, you know, Margaret at the Midwest Business Group on Health has done a phenomenal job for us. She's going to be moderating that one. And she's led several workshops in the past with us about kind of advanced benefit strategies. And she's kind of gone beyond just kind of the beginner and intermediate discussion on what employers are doing and bringing in some, you know, she's brought in some real innovative minds in HR. So, you know, we have to mention, you know, her and the Midwest Business Group on Health and the assistance that they've been providing us. And Margaret will be leading the closing panel on Thursday. You absolutely do not want to miss. We have David Hines. David is the Director of Employee Benefits at Metro Nashville Public Schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have the public sector employee. I think he manages about 3,000 employee lives, and I know that David heavily invests in wellness, heavily invests in on-site clinic strategies.
Yep.
And from what I've heard about past presentations of his and discussions that we've had with him, that should be a phenomenal perspective. And then of course we have Olga Rupert. She is the VP of Benefits and Comp at Hub International, which of course is a rapidly growing brokerage firm, and she represents the HR side there. That'll be interesting. I know they've been acquiring a significant amount. They've been growing a lot over the past
right.
couple of years, acquiring firms, so she should have some interesting perspectives. And then Kristen Badger at Benefits Manager at Zurich,
yeah.
North America.
Quality company, and then we're looking for that,
mm-hmm.
A fourth and next thing. And then we'll be executing for the second time our Rapid Fire Innovation General Session, where our attendees will be able to hear from 12 different innovators, you know, each giving kind of their 3 to 5 minute elevator pitch on their value proposition and the niche and the kind of the industry pain points and the opportunity they saw, you know, with their solutions. So,
yeah, and, you know, we have, of course, you know, Meg Murphy at Maxwell. She did a fantastic job in Dallas. You know, we did this and it kind of had a private exchange slice to it where, you know, everybody presenting was either a, you know, a private exchange or talking about how they could possibly fit or do fit and with a private exchange solution. This one we're going to open up to the more general field of healthcare consumers, innovative health and benefits and wellness. So, you know, we're looking forward to having Meg back with us. She always does a great job. And just run through real quick before we, you know, bring on our first guest in about 30 seconds. Just run through the presenters that we have lined up now. Vineet at Health Expense is the CEO of Health Expense. Dave Sleepak, he is with Single Care. Jared Heyman, CEO and founder of CrowdMed. Chris Logan with Capsi Health. Annette Griffin, she is the VP of Business Development at Totem Solutions, and she will actually be bringing up an employer client, a benefits specialist, to present with her on her 3 to 5 minute pitch. So, you know, that's the first six that we have. Expect to see about 4 to 6 more.
Yep.
Should be great.
Should be, and then we'll do our general session on exchange. But again, how do people find out all the details, Jonathan? Where
sure, yeah, we're at theiaccforum.com. Just go to that page. You can click the agenda tab, speakers, sponsors, check them all out, who's going to be there. We have a lot of great people signed up already. And then, of course, top right of that page, register now.
Yep.
Early bird rates.
And if you're an employer, you can qualify for a VIP, special free VIP. I'd like to welcome our first guest on the program as we move into a pretty packed agenda, and we're really happy to have him spend some time with us. Jeff Brizolara, who is Chief Clinical Officer with Vivere out of Dallas, Texas, one of the leading workplace wellness providers. Jeff, good morning, and welcome to our program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, nice to have you on the program. Before we kind of take a deep dive into some of these discussion points, give our audience a little backgrounder on what you guys are doing out there.
I'll tell you what, it's busy every day. Vivere continues to innovate, and you know, we're working with employers across the country on anything from biometric screenings to health coaching to disease management. Continue to make a portal that people want to get into and continue to go back to time and time throughout the day. So we're just, you know, helping clients change their culture, helping employees change their behaviors, and just trying to help them manage healthcare costs overall.
Yeah. Hey Jeff, when we talk about disease management a little bit, I mean, a couple years ago, disease management kind of took a pretty bad hit because of some ROI that they weren't delivering. And my feeling is that today, sometimes disease management is kind of this forgotten component into a well-rounded wellness program. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, some of that comes from just the low identification rates that these, you know, DM programs typically get. And so I think coupling it with a wellness program, what we found is that we could really increase the identification, the number of people that are first identified and then that we can reach out to and get to participate. And I think that's the key is if you have low identification and participation, you're just not going to get the results you want. But when you couple with that wellness program, we found that to be a real kicker to really kick up the people involved in the program and see the type of results that I think clients are expecting.
So that and what else is kind of uniquely different that Vivere is doing from kind of some of the other competitors out there?
Right. Well, the biggest thing is that we identify 22 conditions. So typically most DM providers are looking at the top five things like asthma, COPD, diabetes. Well, we've taken those and expanded it to 22 conditions. So what we, you know, our belief is that let's get to the things like high blood pressure and hypertension and back pain and osteoarthritis, things that people often overlook, but those are big cost drivers. And if we can get to those early, help people make some changes in behaviors and maybe keep those from manifesting into diabetes and heart disease and some of the big cost drivers. So that's our big differentiator is that we expanded that into 22 conditions. Also, we couple it with our wellness program. So when they're speaking to a disease management expert, a dietitian or a nurse, they're not just talking about their condition. We're talking about their wellness program. We're talking about getting online and taking activities and courses and getting to their doctor to make sure they get their preventive care done and all those other things that make up the person's life other than their condition. So if you just focus on the condition, a lot of times you're going to lose that person. If you can tie that DM program into wellness incentives and their regular daily lifestyle, I think the chances of making a bigger impact on that is much greater.
So if I'm an employer and I'm what are the key considerations that I should take into account when looking to embrace a disease management component as part of my overall, you know, wellness initiative?
Well, again, I think make sure that they're going to look at more than just the top five conditions that are typically part of every DM program, because you're not going to get to everybody that way, and such a small a percent of the participation is going to be from that group. If you can expand that, you can see up to 55-60% of your population identified. Get those individuals into talking with the dietitian and nurse. Get them talking about other things other than that condition, getting to their doctor, making sure that they're active, they're eating correctly, they're managing their stress. And I think that's the great thing, is they're working with the clinician, but at the same time, they're not just talking about those conditions. So I think that's number one. Make sure that the employer, or that, you know, the employer has to look for a group and a vendor that can actually provide more than just those five typical conditions. The other thing is make sure that they can incentivize it and make it part of the wellness program. That's through creative incentive management, creative program creation, and I think those are the things that the employer has to look for before signing on to a DM program.
And then wouldn't you take the other practical considerations for doing that is that, you know, A, you're going to take better care of your employees. You're going to, you know, make sure you enhance your productivity, but you're also going to, you know, protect your healthcare bubble from bursting too, correct? I mean, if we have to focus on keeping the well, but if you don't address those with these conditions, we're not taking care of them. We're not maintaining good productivity, and we're not really doing all we can to bend that cost curve, correct?
Right. And what happens is, you know, there are people migrating into the unhealthy side every day. So it's typical to say, let's just look at the small group today that might be unhealthy and have these big conditions. But we're looking at everybody. We're looking at the total population, because if you don't watch them, they are going to be your high-cost people within either a year, 3 years, 5 years. Somewhere down the line, they're going to be impacting you. And that's, you know, again, that's where it starts out normally. ROI, let's see what we can do. How can we bend the cost curve? How can we slow down the cost increasing? So that's where it begins, but then it really gets down to engagement, total behavior change, and just a happier, healthier culture and a happier, healthier employer leads to a more productive employee.
So what type of research went into your expansion of your DM program?
Right. So this could, this a couple of things. One is we look at ourselves as a test kitchen. So we try everything out on our own employees. I mean, we have a very healthy, a younger workforce, but we certainly still have conditions that can, you know, manifest and cause some pain on the dollar sign. So we try these programs on ourselves first. We also did research and really looked at what are the big cost drivers. Let's make sure that the conditions that we are looking at every day and expanding to are conditions that are going to eventually or even immediately start driving costs. So that was the research that we really took into. We have an active medical advisory board. They look at these conditions. They make sure that, you know, our care plans are all evidence-based and that they can lead to the best results for both the member and the employer.
So talk a little bit about you know, you're putting a program in place, you know, communications and engagement is incredibly important, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to expand on that. What kind of things you guys are doing to, you know, make sure that communication is clear and concise and on a regular basis, and how you, you know, work on engagement?
Right. So it can come from two different ways. One is setting up the original communication that's going to go out to the employees to make sure that they understand what the program is, and you have to meet them where they are. So some are okay doing an email. Some are okay doing, you know, old-school mail out. Some are okay putting posters up around the company. It just depends on the culture. So you really have to do a deep dive into your culture to make sure what's the best way to get that word out. Then when it comes down to the actual coaching, you've got to be able to coach face-to-face or, you know, via text messaging or through phone, through secure email. You have to be able to meet the member what's most comfortable with them to get them to participate. So our communication begins well before the program ever starts, and it continues day in and day out. I mean, we find the clients that really adopt and embrace active communication, ongoing communication, and targeted communication are the ones who are most happy with the results because they have high awareness, they have high participation, more people getting involved, they're going to see the results that they're looking for.
What are when it comes to in engaging employers out there and getting them, you know, on board with what you're doing, what are some of the biggest hurdles to get over and kind of getting them to seek to understand, you know, the uniqueness about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, probably it starts with you've got to have the buy-in from the top leadership. You know, they've got to sign it. They've got to sign off on it. They've got to adopt it themselves. They've got to be examples of that. They certainly don't have to be in the best shape. They just got to be active participants and definitely willing to be out there and encourage everybody to stay involved. So that's usually the toughest part. Once you can get the leadership buy-in, then it's just a matter of sitting down, mapping out what the program's going to look like, and, you know, again, going back to communication, making sure that the incentives are meaningful to that particular environment, make sure the culture is changing, because if you can set that culture up, and that's a big shift. You know, a lot of times you've got cultures that have been in place for, you know, 30 or 40 years, and you're coming in saying, well, here's some small changes we need to make. We need to make, you know, maybe do a two-minute drill in the middle of the day where everybody stops, does 2 minutes of some type of exercise. Well, that's a big change for a company that's used to driving and driving 8 hours a day. So I think really getting to know the culture, working with them, but the, you know, that first thing is getting the leadership buy-in and the willingness to, you know, be open to ideas on how to adopt a healthier culture so that the employees can stay motivated.
Yeah, that's good. You know, we live in a digital age. What are the type of things that you're doing there to really embrace, you know, the digital tools that are in the marketplace for better member engagement, monitoring, et cetera?
Well, everything has to be accessible via mobile. You know, so whatever the, you know, whatever your pick is for the way that you communicate and get information, we have to have the wellness services available there. So whether it's somebody's phone, whether it's somebody's, you know, computer, whether it's a TV these days, we have to be there. It has to be usable. It has to be relevant. So we're continually making sure that those things are done. I mean, we have product teams that just look at the best way to innovate and just keep it fresh. I mean, that's the other big challenge, is keeping information fresh. Because a lot of times, you know, the recommendations for managing diabetes and managing heart disease, they don't change dramatically. But keeping that content fresh so that people want to keep going back in and see if there's something new that they can learn, that's the biggest challenge. And then from a coaching aspect, it's always looking at what's the best way to communicate with the individual. Again, it might be, you know, it might be face-to-face on-site. We see a lot of employers looking at on-site coaches and on-site diabetes educators to help, you know, get the people who that's the best way to get to them and manage their condition. But then other ones want to do telephonic. Some want to do secure email. Some want to do chat. Some want to do video chat. So you just have to be ready and able to meet the member where they are, but provide the communication method and mode that they're most interested in using.
Yeah. Jeff, is there a specific employer target size that you guys work with, or do you cover the gamut of the various size employers? I mean, tell me, you know, is there a range?
Right. We have a sweet spot, you know, 2,500 to 5,000, but we have clients that have 100,000 employees. We have clients that have 500 employees. We'll work with any size client. You know, mid-market is typically where we find most of our business coming from, but we've had great success with really large clients because we just, again, are adaptable, we're scalable, we can meet them where they are with their needs. And at the same time, we're willing to go, you know, with the smaller clients. A lot of the bigger health management and wellness providers don't want to work with the smaller clients. We're happy to work with clients of all size.
That's great. Jeff, listen, it's been great having you on the program today, and I want to give you an opportunity to kind of recap this discussion and leave our audience with a couple takeaways, if you would, please.
Okay. Well, first thing I do want to say is that, you know, we have, and when it comes down to the disease management, that's the big topic of the day, the expansion of the 22 conditions. And we have a call center. We call our call center a health center, but we have a call center that just received a Stevie Award, internationally recognized for the service it gets. We get tons of inbound calls, over 20,000 inbound calls, helping members either, you know, figure out what their way around their program, set up coaching sessions. Our coaches are very active. And Vivary is just that company that can really assist and help any client that's really interested in making an impact on their employees' health and on their bottom line. So we're definitely that employer that can do that.
Well, Jeff, really, I appreciated this discussion. Appreciate your time. Enjoy your weekend in Dallas, and look forward to talking with you and your team sometime in the near future again.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care, Jeff. Take care.
All right.
Good stuff they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
We're going to go from workplace wellness to healthcare concierge. And in between time, I mean, this is kind of the subject matter that, you know, we'll pick up on what we're talking about before at IHC Forum and Expo. You know, we talked about the general sessions in the opening. The workshops really cover the diversity of kind of our programs, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we try to develop a diverse selection of workshops, sometimes to the point where, you know, maybe there's too many good ones and people can't get everyone that they want. But, yeah, we really have some good topics lined up.
You know, healthcare consumerism is such a big footprint. I think that, you know, as we continue to try to help the industry define it, it's not just about a CDHP and an HSA. It's not just about wellness. There's a lot around it, including the supply side, the evolving, changing networks that are out there. You know, you've talked about transparency and telehealth. We've got, you know, concierge and advocacy on coming on the phone here in a minute to talk about, you know, what they're doing to help consumers make the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's all about engaging employees in their health and well-being. And, you know, it's kind of a lot of different areas converging. Now, and you see that with, you know, various products like Fidelity in their health marketplace. The connection between well-being, health, and finances is one that employers are increasingly seeing. You know, maybe they're not as, you know, as siloed as they were before, and in many organizations they probably still are. You know, we had a, you know, CFO, HR, and benefits, you know, making decisions that need to align with each other.
No, I think that's very true. And you see the, you know, the emergence of financial wellness and the financial
wellness
piece. That's actually tying together. You see, you know, we did a webinar earlier this week with the team at 8 Sunday and Cypress Exchange. And, you know, one of the things I talked about is the increasing role that retirement advisors are moving to have in the health and benefit space. Because they see what's happening with HSAs, they see what's happening around, you know, financial wellness, you know, to make your point that there is that convergence, Fidelity, certainly.
Yep.
Now you have MassMutual entering the market that is a really traditional retirement, you know, services company and you know, provider, you know, coming in this
field. Yeah, and, you know, in Monday's newsletter, and actually you can already preview the article on our website right now, but we have a contribution from Joe Ellis, and he's a senior vice president at CBIZ.
Yep.
So we actually just published this this morning. And he starts off his article, when we think about traditional well-being practices, formerly wellness, and CBIZ, you know, they're going to be at our show and doing a total well-being workshop with a lot of good employers on there. They're definitely on a trend over there of kind of eliminating the term wellness altogether, which is kind of interesting. They're focusing on well-being practices. So, you know, just a change in nomenclature, but it's kind of interesting to see what that might imply. Anyway, he says, when we think about traditional well-being practices, formerly wellness, what usually comes to mind are biometric screenings, health risk assessments, et cetera. What many HR professionals are discovering, to no one's surprise, is that in spite of all these efforts, employees are still stressed, and even with the best well-being program, employers often see little reduction in employee stress levels. So, I mean, you know, also I had a call yesterday with Kevin Renner at eMindful, and he's going to be we're actually working on a six-part series on mindfulness that we're going to be publishing online. So, you know, really delving into not only what is mindfulness and how it can apply in the workforce, but in his first story, he goes quite in-depth into a variety of scientific studies that have proven that mindfulness will reduce a lot of the, you know, the health, you know, the measurements that employers have been looking at through traditional wellness programs, like blood pressure.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's all these different things coming together. It's
and to find that a forum, too. You know, Kevin and his group and others
sure.
will be
yeah, and
with this a forum.
We'll actually be, you know, talking about on next week's program as well. But it's all these different things, mindfulness, financial wellness, you know, the retirement planning. All of it's coming together in, you know, call it engagement, call it consumerism. You know, whatever it's just
call it caring about your people,
creating a better workforce,
yeah,
more
keeping your people, and that you know, and to your point earlier, I mean, millennials are looking for that type of thing, that type of environment.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, absolutely, what's driving quite a bit of it.
And we'll be opening up our superstar and innovators coming up sometime what in mid April, correct? Superstar and innovators coming up. So, you know, look for that, you know, and be thinking about who you can nominate, what key employers, what key consultants, brokers, what innovators out there, you look to nominate. And you can find that nomination will, again, open up around April 11th and be on our website, theihcc.com. And then we'll have an award ceremony at IHC Forum West in Las Vegas in November. Now, I'd like to welcome our second guest on the program, Rob Cavanaugh, President of Field Operations with Alkylate, one of the leaders in really on-demand healthcare concierge. And we're going to be really talking about one of his surveys today. But, hey, Rob, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
Hey, I understand you're here in Atlanta as well, right?
I am enjoying the nice weather as well that you guys are enjoying from last evening and this morning.
Yeah. Anyway, nice to have you on the program. Before we kind of dive into this latest survey that you guys did, Harris Poll survey, give our audience a little better background on Alkylate, please.
Sure, thanks. And so, you know, Alkylate was founded on, if you start all the way back, it's founded on this idea that, and it ties into a lot of the topics, actually, that you guys have been talking through this morning, but the best way to help individuals and their families get the best care and to avoid, you know, challenges or costly mistakes that happen along the way in healthcare is you got to design a service around them. And so, you know, we've designed this service and come to market with something that is focused exactly on the consumer. It's focused on helping them throughout their entire, you know, healthcare journey, regardless of the entry point. And so, you know, we have these fundamental principles that we operate by in the service. So we believe the solution's got to be delivered to the consumer in a highly personalized manner. And so context matters in healthcare. And so a lot of the solutions, a lot of the technologies you see in the marketplace today don't necessarily bring that context forward as they engage the consumer. And so it's an important part of the way we engage. You got to deliver it from a service and technology perspective. And so consumers will engage in different ways. So just delivering a technology solution or just delivering a service doesn't really address the entire issue. And so we believe you can't leave it to the consumer to try to find their way through this process by adding another phone number, adding another mobile app, and having those technologies and those services not having the proper context. And so this combination's got to be applied across their entire journey, not just points that they enter the system. And you know, the thing that I believe we also add to this outside of the technology and the service and the context is we build this behavioral science model methodology into our technology and service that allow you to significantly improve the experience, the outcomes, and the cost.
Yeah.
And so we've reinvented the consumer engagement model through this on-demand concierge model.
You know, Robin, I think, you know, to your point, you can't just turn the light switch on and expect everyone to be a instant healthcare consumer, can we?
You can't. And what we're doing, you know, it's really interesting as we get into some of the Harris Poll findings is the customers, the employers are spending all this money to launch these different point solutions for their employees. They're spending a lot of money to try to help them, and the consumers are getting lost in that focus because – you know, what happens when you enter healthcare? You're thrust into it typically. You're scared, confused, and the last thing you're going to remember is some mobile app that was launched 6 months ago that might help you along the way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You've got to guide them through that journey.
Yeah. So so tell us a little bit, because I think this Harris survey kind of exposed a lot of that. So talk a little bit about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, I mean, the Harris poll, while the information wasn't totally surprising to us, some of the findings, it basically kind of reconfirmed things that we know, that the consumers are confused in use of the healthcare system. They don't know where to turn. They're not able to really manage that. And, you know, they're provided a whole bunch of tools and services. They don't understand how to access them. Yeah. So one of the percentages of engagement was that I found fascinating is 32% of the people have difficulty or are uncomfortable accessing the healthcare system versus 25% buying a house. And so the consumers are telling you, I'd rather go buy a house than access the U.S. healthcare system today.
Yeah, well, first of all, we've got an industry that's filled with the jungle of acronyms, don't we? That means something to we in the industry, but to the consumer, it means nothing. Correct? I mean, it's a confusing jungle.
Correct.
Of acronyms.
I mean, yeah, and you think about that example even on buying the house. The way I think about it, if you're buying a house, you have technology you can use like a Zillow or something else out there that would help you understand what's for sale, the market, so forth.
Right.
But then you can engage a realtor that'll kind of walk you through getting a loan, finding somebody to do a home inspection, all the details of that whole process. And so that same, it's improving even on the real estate side, but that same level of consumer engagement hasn't existed in the healthcare side.
Yeah. And to your point, we're hard at work developing all these resources out there, but that creates kind of a cloud of confusion for consumers too. And I don't think we should be surprised about, to your point, you weren't surprised either. I don't think we should be surprised at this. We're just on the beginning journey of, creating, healthcare consumers and educating and helping them make these right decisions. I mean, we're relatively new on this path. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree, and I would agree that it's inspiring to see the level of innovation that's going on in the hospitals, in the doctor's offices, in the technology that's coming into the market. I mean, it certainly is going to improve over time. We just have a fundamental belief that you got to tie all this stuff together to make it work effectively for the consumer, and I want to see more innovation coming with the consumer at the center of it, and not just at the center of it, but all the way through their healthcare journey.
Yeah, I would agree with you. In the survey, you actually broke it down into some life stages too. Can you talk about that? I mean, we talk a lot about how millennials are going to change healthcare, but we don't want to eliminate all the other different workers and their life stages. So talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, as we began digging into the data, we wanted to know more about the different groups of data. So the young workers, which we categorized as averaging under 30 years of age, had the least comfort and knowledge in navigating the healthcare system of all the life stages. That in itself is not totally surprising that the youngest entering in because they don't have the experience. But I think if you put the lens of what you guys were even talking about earlier today of the millennial groups, they're social, they like to collaborate, they're open to change, they embrace technology. Put that with coupling that with the amount of innovation happening in this space, they're still confused and they're still frustrated. So not surprising, but again, a little bit more when you put the lens of millennials on it. Then you have the working families, average age about 39, second lowest positive rating of overall benefits and healthcare experience at 42%. So working families are spending a significant amount of time dealing with health issues than even the younger population. And I think part of that might be their parents and their kids still engaging them, asking for assistance in healthcare and understanding how to navigate it.
So when you're working with your employer clients or even those that you're embracing to become your clients, I mean, how do you, what do you work with them on around this information? What do you want them to see and embrace with this type of information?
Yeah, I want them to understand the impact of the investments they're making to us as you think about all of those investments. I think about this survey, and if I'm sitting in running a human resources department or even a company, that you need to turn to, are we really being honest about all of the tools and technology that we're using today? We see you know, these 50-cent solutions, $1 solutions, there's so many of them hitting the marketplace today, and people are testing them because they want this to be better for their employees. But I think you have to be honest whether they're really working, because our engagement, when we look at the whole healthcare journey and how the consumers are using it, we're not seeing deep engagement of those technologies. We think you've got to design and deliver healthcare services based on the entire healthcare journey. I talked about this at the beginning. It's not just about a price transparency tool that you use. What happens after you get your second opinion? What do you do with that data? You know, right. The consumer is going to be confused. All right, I have a differing opinion. What do I do with it? They want to talk to somebody. So you have to have this blend of services and technology to be able to consume it. And you need to guide the consumer through every step of the process, and you need to know that population, the differences in the way millennials think, the differences in the way, you know, the working families think in this process is super important. You know, I often describe, I come from a technology background, so I love the use of technology to solve problems. But the ability to engage with the consumer and engage the right way is going to uncover different information. And we had a person call into our concierge line asking to refill a prescription for their daughter. And our, you know, health assistant continued to ask questions. How are you doing? What's going on in your life? And what gets uncovered is this mom who had lost her daughter 18 months ago had gained over 150 pounds, was about to enter into the healthcare system and in really a difficult spot. Your mobile app and your price transparency tool and whatever technology you deliver is not going to uncover that. So you have to have this blend of technology and services to address the whole person.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. What else did you find interesting from the survey that you might want to talk to our audience about today?
You know, I think just overall the state of the environment. So we think it's necessary for people to understand the demographic, which I talked about. The days of the primary care physician being your center point and trusted source of information, we think are gone. And it's not because they don't want to. They don't have time to engage and understand every contextual barrier. And so the data is screaming out. Their employees, the consumers need help. They need someone holding their hand through the entire journey, and they're frustrated with the services they're delivering.
Yeah. Great discussion, Rob, and really enjoyed having you on the program. I want to give you an opportunity to leave our audience with a couple key takeaways, if you would, please.
Sure. I would go back to the same premises that I started with, that to address the challenges and to embrace the technology and innovation that exists in the marketplace today, you have to have something that's consumer-focused. You have to have something that creates and delivers a blend of technology and services to do that. And you got to understand the demographic of your population and how they want to interact. And you need to meet them where they are in the process, whether that's via a mobile app, whether that's via a telephone call. And the last point I would leave you with is the importance of context in healthcare, because I don't think we spend enough time today on it. And I think we've built a foundational model that have driven some incredible results across our population. 70% engagement, we're addressing 90% of the spend. You know, we have incredible satisfaction ratings, almost a million users on our system today. We have a 98% employee satisfaction rating.
That's good stuff, Rob. If a listener wants to get in touch with you, how can they reach you, please?
Yeah, you can just go to our website, www.accolade.com, and there's links right there to talk to us directly or submit a request if you prefer to do it on via technology.
Great, Rob. Listen, have a great weekend, and enjoyed the discussion and appreciated your time this morning.
Thank you both. Take care.
Take care. Doing some good stuff. I mean, you know, again, you know, these consumers are going to need help, you know, and navigating the system and understanding, you know, the choices they need to make. And I think to Rob's point too, it just doesn't start with, hey, you found the second opinion, but how do you help them navigate through the journey completely, even in claims, you know, managing claims and negotiating claims, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the whole transparency trend, you know, for the last couple of years, I think has, you know, it's starting to evolve a bit more. it was very simple, just focused on price at the beginning. We're kind of moving into a next generation of solutions there.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's exactly right. You know, I think, as we wait for our next guest to kind of join us here, we talk a lot about our May event, but we've got two really quality events following it this year. You know, our second private exchange event will come in Baltimore, first week of September. And if you're out there, and first of all, if you're interested in attending right now, there's a very special $99 rate to attend. You know, both our final events, the Super Saver rates are in place, Forum West. It'll happen the day after election, which will cause for an interesting discussion to take place out there among the constituents that are going to be with us. But our Private Exchange Forum and IC Forum West, we're really, the doors open for speaker considerations. You know, if people want to talk to us about speaker considerations, you know, should, contact us and reach out to us. And again, Jonathan, what's the dates of our Private Exchange Forum?
Private Exchange Forum is going to be 8th and 9th of September.
And then IC Forum West is 8th through the...
No, it's 9 and 10.
9 and 10.
Of November.
Yes. So, again, you can find all of our events at theihccforum.com or access it through our main corporate website, our main institute website, theihcc.com, where you can also find information on what's evolving with our IHC University. We've done a lot of work with IHC University and around our certification program. There's a depth of information there. There's access to videos from all the general sessions from our past events over the last, really 2 years, that you can kind of get a flavor of, the discussions that take place in our general sessions. So, again, theihcc.com. And again, the reminder about IHC Forum and Expo, their early bird rates are in existence now until the end of the month.
Yeah, and, back to, Baltimore, it's going to be our next event after Atlanta. So we are, working on that at the same time as the Atlanta program. Our agenda is in many ways going to mimic what people may have seen in Dallas if you were at that event. It's just going to kind of update a lot of that content.
Yeah, it'll be fresh thinking, fresh dialogue. Yeah.
For, going into open enrollment and, January 1, 2017, fresh perspectives for that. And then, of course, a lot of the employers and brokers are going to be a little bit more focused on kind of the Eastern Seaboard, the kind of D.C., Maryland region. But we are already securing speakers now. So if you go to, again, theihccforum.com, just click on, 2016 events, Baltimore, right there. Again, you can register at $99 right now. And, some of our speakers, we have Laurel Pickering, the Northeast Business Group on Health out of New York City. And, of course, they do some great work there. And she's going to be leading our closing panel on employers evaluating exchanges and sharing experiences, which, in the Dallas event, that was, again, you can talk theory, you can talk, strategies and, what your product can do supposedly that other people cannot, et cetera. The final panel on, who has implemented it, how was that implementation, what was the due diligence like? How have your employees responded to it? That discussion was, for me, the biggest takeaway of the event. And, we're going to have some great employers, again, from the Eastern Seaboard joining us. And, the attendance always thins out a little bit as people try to run home and, catch flights to make it back for the weekend. But, yeah, that one should be really,
it should be
where everything kind of comes together.
Yeah, should be. And again, you can find information on our forum website, theihccforum.com.
Right.
I was talking earlier that we did a really successful webinar this week with the team at H-Centive, and of Cypress Exchange, really talking about the digital revolution and geared primarily to brokers and helping them understand and become better educated on where technology is impacting their clients and their practice and how technology can be a good tool for them. And we'll do a second part series coming up May 3rd. And you can find, again, that information on our core website. And you can register now for that webinar at theihcc.com. Click on our events and go down to webinar and click on webinars.
Yeah, you can actually just find it. It's just a tile on the homepage. You go to theihcc.com, you'll see it right there with our logo and a Sentiv's logo. We had the webinar on Tuesday morning, which you can actually listen to that as archived audio now at the same location we just mentioned. And May 3rd is going to be the date of the next one. These are free webinars. We should be clear to add. That's going to be Tuesday, May 3rd at 11 a.m. Eastern. The title of the webinar is The Digital Revolution, How Brokers Can Transition to Digital Business. If you're a broker out there who is listening this morning, you'll definitely want to, sign up for the free webinar. You actually are automatically entered into a raffle to win free registration for one of our remaining 2016 conferences. And again, the speakers are going to be in addition to you, of course. We're going to have Rob Poley. He is the president of the Insurance Marketing Center. And again, Megan Urbaniak, associate vice president of business development for WebInsure Benefits.
And again, to your point, these are educational webinars for brokers to better understand and get their arms around this digital revolution that's taking place. And talk about the use of where technology is enabling more efficient management of benefits, and to talk really about, health and well-being. It's Mary Kane, Senior Director of Clinical Strategy and Behavior Change for GIF, one of the leaders in providing an enterprise benefit platform to major employers. Mary, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for getting up bright and early to join us from the West Coast. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Mary, before we kind of jump into, understand engagement and employee health programs, give our audience just a little bit of background on GIF, if you would, please.
Sure. GIF is an employee health benefits platform, and a lot of what we do is help employers bring together and offer to the individual employee a single place to go for their health and wellness benefits. So our platform is designed to bring everything together and using incentives and amazing, beautiful, intuitive design, create a delightful experience for the employee. We've had a lot of success at actually changing and improving the engagement. What your previous caller was just talking about, improving the ability to engage employees to interact with these different solutions that employers are paying for.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, we want to talk about, kind of your sweet spot is that, the title is kind of cracking the nut on behavior change, really understanding engagement and employee health programs. Kind of help us get our arms around, that, if you would, please.
Yeah, so I think, and I really appreciated the comments from Mr. Kavanaugh from Accolade. I think that a lot of what he talked about resonates well with how I also think about individuals engaging in their health and healthcare journey. One of the things that's really important to recognize is that people play different roles and have different motivations depending upon where they are in the journey. In some cases, somebody is being thrown into a situation that they're not necessarily prepared for and they're acting as a patient. They might be in a very passive role where things are being done to them. In other situations, people might be more active and be making decisions much like a consumer. And so they're playing a consumer role where they're looking for information and they're trying to figure out how to make their decisions. And then there's folks who are unhappy with how things are going in their healthcare journey and they're acting in more of an activist or advocate role. And in each of these roles, people have different motivations, they've got different needs, they've got different needs for information, they've got different needs for empathy and support. And I think it's important to recognize that people play different roles depending on where they are in the system and where they are in their needs. I think the other thing that's important to think about is motivation and how to utilize or leverage an individual's motivation, understand and leverage an individual's motivation with regard to helping them make the changes that they want to make. And my background, my background is in chronic disease management programs, building them for disease management companies and wellness companies. And one of the things that we found, well, there are two things that we paid attention to. One was this notion of patient activation and understanding, how do I relate to my healthcare? How do I relate to managing my healthcare? Am I an active manager where I, you know everything that's going on, I know how to prevent exacerbation, and when I have a problem or stress or a relapse, I have an ability to come back from that to some degree, might be connected to resilience as well? Or am I a person who really is, again, quite passive and thinks that things are being done to me and I'm just like this, this is the way I was born and I'm not necessarily as activated? So that's one thing that we think about in the context of coaching people. Another thing that we think about is motivation and the motivation spectrum generally, and this notion of intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. And intrinsic motivation is the holy grail, understanding how to help somebody do the right thing because it feels good for them. Taking a walk is something that feels good for them. Eating well feels good to them, and they do it for the pleasure of doing it, as opposed to extrinsic motivation, which are all the drivers that we're often using in health and wellness to try to drive people to engage more with their benefits. And one thing I'll add, and then I'll stop talking for a little bit, is extrinsic motivation that is closest to intrinsic motivation is something that's aligned with my values and my identity as an individual. So if my family and hanging out with my kids is really important to me, then that's something that's a potential hook as a motivation for me related to my health. And what's interesting is that the opposite end of the spectrum of extrinsic motivation is actually money. So paying people incentive to do things is absolutely something that works as a way to get interest and to get people involved. There, I think the jury is out as to whether or not that's something that will create sustained behavior change, because it's not as connected to necessarily to my values and how I see myself.
How do you, Mary, how do you address what we call the non-engaged population, you know, where a lot of techniques, a lot of, you know, programs, education have tried to engage them but have failed in getting them to change health behaviors over and over again? How do you address that target group? If I'm an employer, how do you help me address that target group?
Well, I think that there's, you know, again, thinking about motivation, I think that there's a couple of, and I'll actually speak about motivation and activation in this context. Thinking about motivation, I think it's important to understand, for individuals, my values might also be connected to the values and norm of the culture or the community of my employer. So if I'm connected to my job, if I'm connected to the people around me, in this notion of social contagion, their norms are norms that are more likely to be my norms. And so if you can create a culture at an organization where, you know, taking walks at lunchtime is a normal thing, having walking meetings for one-on-one conversations is a normal thing, then those norms start to be expected for everybody within the organization. And that's one way of maybe getting people who aren't necessarily going to participate on their own, is by creating a culture that kind of expects people to behave in a certain way. I think something else to think about in the context of activation, again, is that you need to start with very baby steps. So if you recognize that this person is not somebody who's activated, and you create a situation where you're asking them to take on something that's potentially very overwhelming or much larger than they could potentially do otherwise, you're setting that person up for failure. So figuring out ways to spark their interest and get them involved in very, you know, without it being a massive lift for that individual is another opportunity. At GIF, we've used a lot of, frankly, marketing campaigns. And we've been very successful at getting people engaged. so much so that we've had kind of twice the normal, twice the average engagement for things like biometric screening. And we've had kind of amazing results. And I really attribute it to the creative marketing and also moving into techniques that have been used in other industries, such as personality segmentation, not just clinical segmentation. So really understanding what underlies the individual's approach to their health and motivation. And, you know, in some situations, you're not going to be able to get everybody. You just need to recognize that.
Right. What are some of the key challenges that that GIF has faced in creating this sustained behavior change?
I think that the health insurance, health and wellness benefits are not haven't really embraced and been able to incorporate how other industries engage individuals and how other industries market to and communicate with individuals. Part of that is just that what we're talking about as a topic is relatively complex. And I again, on Mr. Kavanaugh's comments, this notion of helping people navigate a system, navigate this journey of something that they've been thrown into, sort of usually against their will, often in a situation where they don't have the same amount of information as others in the system, and they're kind of expected to step in and know what they're doing. And there's a lack of empathy generally. So I think, our challenge, one of our biggest challenges is just the complexity of what we're dealing with. And what we found is that in most situations, we're going into an employer where those benefits have sat on a static portal behind an intranet wall, not available to the individual in their right. moment of need. And so by being mobile first, our focus is really let's bring the information to the individual. Let's encourage them to understand what the opportunities are by giving them deeper experiences initially, and hopefully being able to get that muscle memory generated by having them interact with some of these services that they may not need for 6 months, right? So, yeah.
If I'm a major employer listening to this program today, senior benefit leader, what are really three key things that you would want them to consider in building an employee health and benefit program that will ultimately successfully help them change employee behavior and improve health?
Well, I mean, I think that it's clear that individuals are interested in improving their health, right? They're spending billions of dollars on diet plans, on Weight Watchers, on gym membership. And granted, yes, we might say that those are the engaged individuals, but even in an engaged population, you're going to find, some 25% of that population is going to have a chronic illness that they're also managing. Thinking about where innovation is coming from, it's not coming from within the healthcare industry. It's coming from consumer-directed products. So being able to have those consumer-directed products, consumer products available for individuals, and being able to harness the innovation by having a system that allows them to swap out solutions or bring in solutions that are engaging and are understanding how to engage individuals with regard to healthy behavior change, I think is one thing to keep in mind. So being aware that innovation is continually happening, and it's probably not happening within healthcare, but more along the edges and from other industries that are figuring out how to do things that healthcare isn't necessarily figuring out how to do. I think another thing to keep in mind is, the fish sinks from the head down, right? If an organization wants to have a healthy culture, it's important for the leadership in that organization to embrace and understand how to create a culture that includes norms that are related to health, communication that's related to health. It's not something that's a once-a-year open enrollment type of experience. It's a daily experience of creating opportunities for people to be healthy and figuring out how to provide the environment and the incentives to help people be healthy. I think the last thing is that you know, personalization and creating an experience that's not a generic one-size-fits-all experience is key. For something to be valuable to me, I have to feel like that I'm getting my money's worth out of it. I'm getting I'm getting value from whatever I'm putting my investing in, right? So if I'm an individual employee, I hope that you're creating something for me that isn't just something that is off the shelf, but rather is tuned to me and my needs as an individual, because everybody has their own definition of what health and well-being means to them and their own set of needs around that.
That's good, Mary. Let our audience know how they can get in contact with you, please.
Sure. It's mcain@gif.com.
Mary, listen, that's a great discussion. I look forward to reconnecting sometime in the future and continuing this discussion as we continue kind of to evolve the consumer and help them kind of make these right choices. You have a great weekend, and again, I thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And thanks to our audience out there for joining us again this week. again, a final reminder about Early Bird for Forum and checking out our 2016 events at theihccforum.com. Thank you all again for spending time with us today, and we'll see you next week on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.